Whoa, that's the extended morning dance ritual. How's everybody doing?
Rocking it. I feel a little unseasonably dressed. No one, I didn't get the memo.
You didn't get the memo. I thought, Brent, were you going to send out the memos? What happened with the memos?
I they don't have the memo.
Nobody does good memos anymore. They're all on emails. They're supposed to be a memo. Like, you know, a holiday invite.
Two. Everyone concerned, please be advised.
We were talking about this in another chat yesterday about, remember the good old days when mail used to come around the corporate office and you'd have a little sticky or a piece of paper stapled on the front of it with everybody's name on it and a checkbox. And once you were done looking at it, you checked your name off and then handed it to the next person. That was what was called CCing.
Well, hopefully everyone at home got the memo that yes, it's ugly sweater day. It's the day to put a Santa hat on your R2-D2 and to wear a fashionable Christmas jacket, which Brent obviously is representing.
Totally. Yep.
Chris, what are we talking about today?
I don't know. We just invited Sam. He's gonna lead us. He's got everything under. Folks, nice to see everybody that we've got in the chat. Thanks for joining us here today. Sam Rogers is with us. And Sam, give us the 30-second or, 35-second biography of yourself. I know you've been with us before, but just in case folks haven't caught that, tell us a bit about yourself and what you do and what you're good at and what you're happy about.
Sure. Well, I'm happy to be here today with all of you celebrating a year of idiotic. And that's really the thing that we should all celebrate today. But myself, I have a company called Snap Synapse. For 20 years or so, I've been doing instructional design, making a lot of content, doing learning management system implementations, helping design workflows for companies, and doing a lot of reporting, which is, I think, what we're going to be talking about today. And coming at it from just like a problem-solving perspective is kind of what I bring, and my approach to reporting is a little askew from how most people usually do it. So I just thought it'd be a fun thing to talk about, and an excuse to come visit you guys. Saw you last at DevLearn. Mm-hmm. Managed to misplace my idiotic cup in the meantime, but it was great to see you there, and love the show. Long time. Watcher, occasional visitor. That's me.
Awesome. Well, we all
caller number three.
We have some internet weirdness happening, I believe.
Uh-oh.
Brent got stuttery and Chris went away. Come on, Chris. He's all blurry.
Uh-oh.
It's a band.
Where am I? Where am I?
Or maybe it's just me. I don't know.
All right.
I didn't want to.
We'll just keep.
Oops. Go ahead.
I was just going to say, well, let's roll with it because, the title of our session, 'Tis the Season to Be EOY Reporting, End of Year Reporting, which of course reminds us all that after the holidays comes the start of a whole new year when we got to figure out what we're going to be taking care of and what things need to be focused on, et cetera. So, and Sam, you were mentioning too, you got a little bit of a different perspective that you're bringing to us today. So let's jump in there.
Sure. Well, I can get rid of the ugly sweater to reveal the other sweater that I get a chance to wear, times like this. When all else fails, manipulate the data. I'm not suggesting that you need to make things up, but that we have fun and play a little bit with the data to talk about, like, what are the decisions that people need to make as a result of any end of year reporting that you would generate. So generally we use end of year reporting a little differently than we use kind of reports that we'd produce along the way of things with people's names on it. You know, these people didn't do this training. These people are supposed to. These people are in this pipeline for this next level sales training, all that stuff that's really focused on people. The end of the year reporting is our occasion to show more of the kinds of decisions that impact budget. Like, are we going to be able to add headcount next year? Hey, do we have any stuff that we made that we need to not use anymore because there's not enough people looking at it? Or maybe we need to market more of this great content that we've made. This is something that we made that we thought was just a throwaway. And look at all the people who are in here appreciating this content that we made. So those are the kinds of decisions that we want to drive to. And the most important thing about any kind of report is who it is that you're making it for. What's the audience for this report? So some people really like to see numbers. Some people just want to look at the data. You don't need to make it pretty. They want to see how everything lines up. And boy, you'd better get those numbers right. A lot of folks, though, higher up the management chain, they just want to look real quick. Can you show me a picture? If you can add even to reports, which tend to be kind of numbers-driven things, some testimonials along the way that help maybe kind of sway a decision in terms of, we could really use a little more cooperation from the marketing department. This is something that, hey, we're going to send up the chain, but it's going to go down to that target in marketing that we're looking to establish a stronger relationship with, or maybe an IT. Those are very different audiences for what we're making a report for. And I'd love it if in the chat, being that we have all these beautiful people, lots of familiar faces and names, all of whom are, of course, appropriately dressed for the situation. I don't know what you're talking about, Jennifer. You look great from here. Love the holiday outfit. But if you guys could throw in the chat here, what are the kinds of decisions that, or the kinds of audiences, either one, that end of year reporting tends to focus on? And I know a lot of you guys are instructional designers. I'm an instructional designer too, but you know, often get saddled with all of this reporting kind of stuff just because there's nobody else really who understands like the relevance of all of this stuff that we've been, all this authoring data, all the different, oh, this learning object versus that training program, you know, those things don't quite line up. This is a job that we often get. So anything that you know of or have encountered, perhaps this year or in previous years, for who's the person that actually cares, that's actually going to make a decision about something as a result of a report, and what are the kinds of things that you've seen come up in the past?
Yeah. Joe is pointing out reporting traditionally focuses on bums in seats or views or completions, those kinds of stats that we think of, you know, relating to content and qualifications. Yeah.
Bums. This is an English word, isn't it? can you translate for me?
It's another interesting part about this too, is that I don't want people to get, it's a tough topic to market, because I think people's eyes glaze over when you start talking about reporting and end of year reporting, and oh my gosh, are those guys really going to talk about that on Idiotic? And it's like, yes, it's really important, but not only does this conversation, I think, lend itself very nicely for those of us who, you know, have waited till the last minute to do anything like this, it's prepping for next year too, right? So maybe you didn't do one this year. Maybe you're not in a position to do it this year, but next year. So what are the things you're going to start tracking in January in order to be prepared to do your end of year reporting next year? I mean, all of the topics that we're talking about today tie into that. So whether you've done it or whether you're on a different fiscal year than the rest of us, it all applies because it's all very circular.
Yeah, that's a great point, Brent. If I may just deepen that point a bit. Every time we're looking backward at the data that we've already gathered, it's an opportunity for us to change how we're doing things to set up for success in the future. We're learning from this experience of making reporting. Part of the audience is who's going to review this and make some decisions. But also for us, we have a fantastic opportunity to look at what it is that we're doing to show impact and maybe count a bit more in that direction starting January 1 so that we can produce a report at the end of December. Excellent point.
Peter was pointing out that not only do they have to, so Peter's group is, I'm trying to scroll back up. Peter says his group receives significant government funding for their training program. So the reports that they have to deliver, you know, show things like number of people trained, so quantities and completions again, but also actual medium term impact of training on people and organizations. So, you know, looking out at how it actually rolls out further past simply bums in seats.
Yes, excellent. That's exactly the kind of thing we're looking for, and now might be appropriate time to bring in our other guest, Chris.
All right,
picture pages. Hey, look at this. This hand actually belongs over here. It's mm-hmm. it's a strange phenomenon. Some of these things that we're talking about here, we can look at, okay, bums and seats, or yes, all of the other synonyms. Thank you everyone for throwing those in the chat. So the students, so what's the number of students that were trained? That's a tricky thing to say because, oftentimes we're not really, if there's a new employee orientation training, how many times did we train that student? What are we looking at here? Is it really the number of students that we had, or is it the number of occurrences that those students had? So back to the bums and seats number, this is something which we may understand really well, but we need to make sure our audience, the people who are reading this report, know that when they see bums and seats, is that the number of times that the bum hit the seat? Or is that the number of bums to which seats were applied? different ways of looking at the same curve. Also, the authorship, how it is that the training that we made is getting used. This can be a really helpful internal thing to look at. We might not want to report this up, but to see, you know, these are the kinds of programs that these instructional designers are working on, and these are the results they're getting. To be able to say this collaborative team produced results that actually got utilization to be higher, that number of bums in seats. Anything especially that we can use to distribute those best practices to say, hey, this is what these instructional designers are doing. What else should we be doing? So we have the, the quality of authorship that we can look at in an objective measure, not like I liked these better, but here's what our student population is using. So, and then, of course, the number of objects. So courses, I spoke briefly about the difference between objects versus training programs. So generally, we're going to have something like a new employee orientation. Everybody's got to take it. But is that one learning object? Or is that a series of learning objects in the 90-day cycle of on-ramping? How is it that we're counting that training program and aggregating these things together? Now, I'm starting not with a tool other than a sheet of paper. Anytime you're making a report, I highly advise you to start with a blank sheet of paper, as opposed to going to the canned reports in your application, whatever that may be, because we're going again to a decision here. We're speaking to a specific audience about something they need to decide. And that doesn't start with a canned report. It starts by figuring out what are the things that go on that report. And as I mentioned before, having some things like testimonials, like ready to go, and laying that out even within a report that you're going to maybe print out and give to someone, or that goes in a PowerPoint deck or something like that. Having this stuff ready to go that's current, that's from the last year, does a lot to help kind of keep people engaged, so that it's not the eyes glaze over maneuver of everything like, oh, looking like way too many charts and graphs.
Mm-hmm. Joanne had noted earlier in the chat that reports equal stories. And that the kind of qualitative information helps provide context and helps actually make it understandable and beyond simply comparing X and Y axes.
Yes. The more that we can tell stories with data rather than just show the fancy charts.
Or rather than just tell the fancy story.
Yeah. And just telling a fancy story is not enough by itself. Excellent point. So I see Gail is saying something there about compliance reporting. So let's look at a compliance report kind of thing. Compliance is assuming that everyone, the population of everybody, has to do this thing. We know that this is everybody. Now, everybody always comes, and hopefully you know this, with an asterisk. So everyone doesn't necessarily mean everyone, even for your compliance trainings. So here's some exceptions. This person was just hired yesterday. Do they really need to go on the compliance report? What is our window for compliance? You know, Sally's still out on maternity leave. We had our big compliance drive in September, but I don't think she comes back until like February. Does she need to be on this compliance report? So anytime there is a gap that is less than 100%, it's going to grab people's eye. We're assuming that everyone goes on our compliance report. But in truth, there's all these other little slivers. And the more that we can identify them, the easier it is to communicate success. There's some number that's less than 100% that's probably going to count for our compliance reporting. And this is a nasty question that people don't like to get too deep into, because it hasn't probably been really specifically defined previously. But if you're working on especially end of year reportings and showing that there's an end of year compliance, we're making it to this percentage, having some acknowledgement of exactly what those things are is really important. And you can even document that right there on the report. I'm sure you're familiar with the little this thing, that thing, and the other thing. So of the people that count, who are the ones that are actually compliant? And there's a great way to show this, as you may be aware, in Excel. Anytime you're making presentational data, taking it from something like your learning management system, it's a good start. It's a good place to get the numbers, but you're probably going to want to parse that data out in a tool that's really made to do that. So oftentimes that's Excel, or bringing it into PowerPoint, or whatever applications you're using at your business. So let's take something like like this kind of report, which is an exploded graph. So that we're taking from this, here's all the things that are true that we need to know, but instead of showing it this way, which doesn't show as much success, we want to show it this way, which is showing what's true. It's still got this chart of all of the people that are being represented here, but we're going to focus on this as our target rather than this as our target. Does that make sense? So this is actually 100% of here. And for something like compliance, likely it matters how we count. So what are the things that are going to go in that bucket? So we've got complete. What about people who took it and haven't succeeded yet? So when we're talking about learning management systems, there's the status of complete and not pass. So if we're just counting learning management system completions, we need to be really careful that if we're tracking things that are less than a passing score, say this person got a 70% and our pass fail is actually 75 or greater. If that information is being stored, these people don't get counted as compliant, right? And it's one of those subtle points that this is why we as instructional designers have a role to play here, because we know the relevance of this data. If someone else was pulling this and they just went off of this number, they wouldn't be telling the truth when they got to this chart. It would be a different number. I'd like to pause for any questions thus far with seeing things in the chat here.
Yeah, Gail has pointed out, what about when you have over 200 educational activities to report out? I work for a medical association that provides continuing education. We have to report out everything to our accreditation body. For those purposes, it's just a big dump of info. Distilling that down to show to leadership is a challenge.
Yeah, it is. It is absolutely a challenge. So they, for an accreditation body, things like I'm pointing out here for the completions or for how it is that we're reporting on compliance. If you're working with some external reporting body, they have definitions somewhere, very likely. And it doesn't matter how your system, learning management system or whatever, it doesn't matter how that system counts things. It matters how the accreditation body counts things. So, hours trained is another common one that comes up, where often an accreditation body, NASBA comes to mind. They'll count a 50-minute hour. Well, that's their rules, and that's what they're applying. But if you're counting things in your learning management system, it's going to actually count like the number of minutes and count up to 60, which is a different kind of importance and a different number altogether.
And matching that data is something that's important to think about as well. Just because we kind of know with the words that people are using, we know what to give them. We do have to understand whether or not the technologies that we're using are communicating and actually defining those things in the same way. So maybe as an end of year sort of reporting, you know, experience, perhaps one of the things that we could do is as a task, end of your task item, is to just audit that, you know, is your LMS or whatever system you're using giving you the right data in the right format that your governing bodies or that your senior leaders, you know, are expecting? Are you using the same words and the same terms? And do they mean the same thing when you're having these conversations? It's mostly about clear communication is really what we're trying to get at, and trying to be very clear about, you know, the successes and what it is, the value that we're providing to the business.
Yeah.
And Gail's pointed out her LMS is designed to report out exactly what she needs to report to her accrediting body. It's wonderful, which I will point out, people saying that their LMS is wonderful is not always the common reaction that people have.
I think maybe she means the report that it pumps out is wonderful. She may not be referring to the LMS as a whole.
Fair enough. Fair enough, but it's everybody has different perspectives on their own LMSs. But just to swing back to so Gail's got the reporting to the body covered. She's got the data going out and it's covering everything that they need from that accreditation body. But maybe from Gail, if you're looking at other kinds of reporting, if you've got the window, what are the kinds of things that you'd like to do more of or think you might. Your organization might want to be able to do better. And then maybe looking at things like comparative data year over year. And then that qualitative data that, the feedback from learners, et cetera, that Sam was pointing out earlier might give you indications of things that people themselves feel could be better or could also be more of, et cetera. So maybe starting to look at that to see where, from you're covering off what your regulation body needs, but what are good things to do next maybe, eh?
Yeah. So a common way to produce a report like Gail is talking about would be to just list out all the different things. And if you're submitting this to an accreditation body, they just want to know that like the numbers look about right. So there may be some kind of annual auditing process, but they may be looking at reporting to see like, oh, these things look about right. But wait, no, that's not matching up with what other people told us about the number of credits you issued or something like that. So they're just looking to sync up these numbers for this course and make sure that it matches up to the number of people that they've received submissions from. So as long as this matches up about right with the learning management system's data, with their own internal reporting data, then you're good. So knowing what number they have already, if you can get that information, allows you to not exactly manipulate the data, but to be able to come up with that self-audit that's going to make it a lot easier to negotiate, getting the numbers that you need, getting those onto a report, and then submitting to the accreditation body, something that's very easy for them to approve, very easy for them to just look and go, yep, here's another one, next. That's what we want to get from as a decision from the accrediting body is we don't need to do an audit. These aren't the droids you're looking for because your company is doing their own audit already. And it's obvious by the numbers that you're generating. So that's one great way to be able to get through that. And in terms of like ways of showing the data that would be maybe more auditable, an outliers report is a good thing to be able to do. And there are tools again in Excel that you can do like showing the top 10% or the bottom 10%. So we've got 200 things here on this report that are just listed out in a grid, but having the ability to surface of this, we've got, well, this one here and this one here, which is the bottom 10 and the top 10. We're going to take these and we're going to break these out into a separate report that's showing, perhaps for utilization, here is our top 10 courses, top 10 percent. Let's make it percent. Let's make it the top 20. Now we can look at the things that are going to be the ones that really we should all be looking at. What are the courses here that are going to have a disproportionate impact just by virtue of the quantity of people that are sitting in them. I see a Wave's hand going by here. Do we need to pause for a moment?
I don't think so. I think Sierra was expressing agreement.
Agreement.
with something further earlier on in the.
So for even a top 20 report, let's say this is something that's going to be used internally only. What are the things that need to go here? Again, before we're approaching any tools, before we're breaking out the little drag and drop interface or getting the gobs of information from wherever you're getting it from, we're going to need to call a thing something. Probably there's a code. Probably there's a unique identifier. And that, you know, can be very different from system to system. Does that belong in this report? What about different versions? Does that, how does that count? So going back to our compliance training example, if we had something that said this course version one, this course version two, so these are our top courses, but they're all like the same course, but they have different numbers. So here's one of those things where it's good that we're involved. If someone took a compliance course in January and there was a substantial revision that happened to that compliance course in March, are they still compliant? If they took it both times, does that count twice? Does it count once? How are we reconciling this data so that we make sure this top 20 is actually reporting on, is this learning objects or is this programs? Because if it's a program, we're going to need to condense all of this stuff down before it's even hitting this report. If it's a learning objects report, then that's much easier to produce. It's much easier to parse with any of your learning management system tools. But is it going to tell people what they need to know about the top 20? Because otherwise, it looks like these top three, strangely, are all our harassment prevention courses. And look, and 4, 5, and 6 is like our customer information security courses. And do we do anything else that's like, why is the same thing here three times? Very common to stumble over stuff like this. Yeah. So figuring it out first on paper.
And why does that report look almost identical to last year's version of this same report?
And that's a great thing to be able to compare against, because probably management is going to do that. Here are the reports you gave me last year. Here's what I'm looking at this year. These things look different. Now, I like to use that to my advantage, because generally, any place that I've walked in the door to help with instructional design or learning management systems or whatever, they don't like what they have so much. They're accustomed to seeing it, but they don't necessarily like need the same reporting that they got last year. If you can give them something better, something that helps them make decisions better, then they want that. They just want to kind of resolve the discrepancy between last year's report and this year's report. So being able to produce something that looks like last year's data and compare it to this year's data.
It's all about consistency, right?
Yeah. We can say, here's where we were. This is how we were reporting things last year. And this year, we're going to use this chart. But here's what this looks like together. So I'm going to take last year's data and put it in this format as well. And I'm going to take this year's data and put it in last year's format as well, so that people can see you're not playing tricks on them. And you're actually helping them make decisions better. This is where we were last year in this year's format. And if you're just wanting to compare it, this is what this year looks like the old way, but this way looks better. Well, now there's no questions that need to be raised, and people feel like they have an understanding. Just even looking at something like this visually, they have an intuitive understanding of what it is that they're looking at. Hmm. So,
hey, Sam, let me interrupt you for just one second. I'm not sure if we mentioned in the green room, but we don't actually normally go for the whole hour. So we wrap up sometimes around, I don't know, 8:30-ish, 8:45-ish, which is totally cool if we keep going on. We like to be very flexible in what in our idioticness, but just wanted to throw that out.
Yeah. So thank you for the time check. That's Brent's very kind way of saying shut up. So here's my favorite thing to do with all the reports, being that they're on paper, is to take the things that we drafted on paper that aren't working. And before we've gone to a computer and really grabbed all this stuff, to just say, okay, here's the ones that didn't work. This is what we're going to need to show. This is the one. Now we're ready to approach the computer. Now we're ready to get the data that actually exposes it in the appropriate format, that answers the question for people of what it is that's really important to them and how it is that they're going to know that you are being successful in what you're doing, and also that you see where your opportunities for growth are, that you see what you're going to do differently next year based on how it is that this year went. If you're monitoring that yourself, if you are already seeing in the data what you need to do differently, just like with the audit scenario, they know you got it. They're not going to provide you as much oversight. There's more trust that you're building with the people who are seeing all these reports. They know that you know what to do next. They know that you're producing results. And from a reporting perspective, I think success has been achieved.
Mm-hmm. So it's so critical to
go out of picture pages mode.
And, all right. Let's
and get back to the holiday party.
We'll unfocus the screen and then we'll turn the video off there. So all three of us, hey, there we go. We're all back now. Taking that time ahead of actually like pulling data helps you also avoid making assumptions about what the data, you know, should look like or should tell, et cetera. How many layers do you have, Sam?
More.
Oh my.
This is getting back to Christmas mode, you know.
It's hilarious. Hey, you know what? I have something to toss in real quick. It was just really weird. So it was perfect timing that I had that sound clip all queued up for us today. But while I was watching the show, I had this alert pop up, and everybody loves the Blue Yeti for some reason. It is on sale. It's like super cheap. So I'll drop the link in. And I think it's because I have the Blue Yeti in one of my lists on Amazon. And so it flagged me and told me that there is a sale going on. It's a pretty significant sale. You rarely see it under $100. So just wanted to share that.
Yeah, that's great. Yeah, this is the time for end of year specials. If there happens to be any budget that needs to get spent on this year as opposed to next year, it's really good to have things like that link handy.
And I think we've thrown out a challenge for next year. Eric was noting that another costume change, it's like going to a Cher concert, except way better. And then Joe does add in the chat, but with less sequins. So I'm thinking next year's holiday season, we've got to bring up the bling more, right?
Yeah.
Very cool. Sam, so much. Thanks so much for being with us here today. If you've got it handy, drop in some info in the chat where people can connect with you. You know, what your favorite routes for that are, LinkedIn, Twitters, or direct emails or websites, that kind of stuff, anything that you've got there. Joe said, noting she always leaves a trail of sequins and glitter whatever she goes. I'm still cleaning up glitter from wrapping last year's Christmas presents in my desk area. I moved some stuff and went, oh, there's still glitter here. Glitter is the gift that keeps on giving in some ways.
Right.
And while Sam's typing that in, thanks so much, everybody, for joining us here today, but also throughout the whole year. Now Brett and I are going to have to think about what end of your reporting we're going to put together for Idiotic to move forward.
Right.
See the things that we can do better, things that we can do differently, etc. Very cool. Guys, thanks so much for joining us, and have an awesome rest of your days. And let's roll that music out and do the dancing thing.
Merry Christmas, everybody. We will see you next year.
Yeah, everybody. Have a great new year, and we'll talk to you on the flip side.
And super huge thanks to Sam for sharing with us. Thanks, buddy.
Thank you for an idiotic year. It's been